You're listening to the Mission Ridge Church Podcast. Mission Ridge is a new church in Missoula, Montana. You can visit us online at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in.
Well, hello, Mission Ridge. This is Logan Daly coming at you. Due to some tech issues on Sunday morning, we forgot to start the recording. I think I pressed the button twice. Don't really know what happened there. I'm sure Paul will make fun of me later. But we didn't get the first part of the sermon recorded. We did get the second part, like the kind of the second half of it, recorded. So what we're going to do is I'm going to go through it here in my office, and then I will splice them together. And once we get to the part where we started recording this morning, we'll just jump to that, and it'll be one continuous thing. With that, let's just jump in and talk about it. I'll give you a little intro as to what we're talking about this week. So this week, we're continuing our relationship series. We're talking about singleness, because singleness is an important aspect of relationships. And who better to talk about singleness than the single person on staff? I mean, after all, you wouldn't hire a morbidly obese trainer to get you in shape. So why would you have a married pastor teach you about singleness? That's what I thought. That's a joke. It's really weird telling that in my office here because nobody's laughing at me, and I don't want to laugh into the mic, but I hope you're laughing at home. I hope it's awkward now. Anyway, so we're talking about singleness, and what we're going to do is we're going to start off with some Matthew chapter 19. So without further ado on that, let's just dive right in. Matthew chapter 19, verse 1, right at the beginning. Now, when Jesus had finished these sayings, he went away from Galilee and entered the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. And large crowds followed him, and he healed them there. All right, cool. And the Pharisees came up to him and tested him by asking, "Is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause?" All right, pause for a second here. What's going on here? There's a couple of options. The Pharisees might be trying to, it says that they're trying to test him. They might be trying to trip him up. They could be trying to, get him to misquote something or put him between a rock and a hard place. These are options. These are different opinions. It could just be that they're just trying to figure out who this Jesus rabbi, like what he believes here about this topic, because this is a common rabbinical debate. This is something that the different rabbis have, they take a different stance on. And because they take a different stance on these things, they might be just asking Jesus, where do you fall in this debate? Could be. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, what this debate circles around is Deuteronomy 24. Specifically, Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 1. So let's pull that up. And we look at this. When a man takes a wife and marries her, if then she finds no favor in his eyes, because he has found some indecency in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, and she departs out of his house. Okay? Now, what we've got going on here is God is laying out the laws and the way the Israelites need to go about handling divorce if it needs to happen. God says this is the way that it has to happen if it's gonna happen. And so we come to this debate around the term some indecency. Now, in the Hebrew, I believe it's pronounced ervat davar. I'm probably really screwing that up, but that's the best I can do. If you want to look that up on Blue Letter Bible, it'll pronounce it for you. That's as close as I can get. But this debate around ervat davar, or some indecency, what constitutes some indecency? Now, there's Bet Shammai, Rabbi Shammai. He said that he considers some indecency to be unchaste behavior. No man shall divorce his wife unless he found in her unchaste behavior, as it is stated. So he's calling this adultery, basically. So if adultery occurs, then divorce. Okay? Seems moderately reasonable. But Hillel, another common name that pops up here. Shammai and Hillel often were kind of at odds with each other. This is they were really popular, and their opinions sometimes butted heads. And so there would be a lot of debate between their teachings, their interpretations. Now, Hillel would say, even if she spoiled his food, so if a woman burnt her husband's toast, you burnt my grilled cheese sandwich, well, then divorce, boom, papers served. Well, and that just sounds a little bit ridiculous to me personally. But this is his teaching, and this is some indecency. Like, she's somehow not holding up her womanly side of the marriage, and this means that, boom, you can divorce her. Okay, so burnt toast. And then the last one I want to point out here is this Rabbi Akiva. Now, I'd never heard of him, but I stumbled upon this in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is the oral teachings that got recorded down. You can go look this up online. It's a lot of interesting stuff. It helps put things in context. But this Rabbi Akiva says, even if he found another prettier than her, meaning so if the husband found another woman prettier than his wife, as it is stated, Irvat Davar, if it happened that she does not find favor in his eyes. So basically, if you find someone prettier, then, well, all right, you know, let's get divorced because she's prettier than you. So peace out, home slice. Bye, Felicia. No, that's just, I can't imagine that that's okay. But for some reason, this is recorded down as this was a teaching that people gave credence to. That just seems wrong. But this possibly sets a little context around why Jesus approaches this the way that he does. Jesus continues on. He answers them back here. We're going to skip back to Matthew 19 now that we know what they're talking about. Jesus answers. He said, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? And said, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Haven't you heard this? Right? So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. So what he's doing is he's calling back to Genesis here. He's saying this is what it's intended to be. So yeah, no, that right there. He's not even answering their question. He's kind of dodging the question a little bit here. But the Pharisees, they come back to him and they say, why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and send her away? They're like, aha, we got you. You're stuck between Moses and Genesis and you got to pick one. Get out of that one, Jesus. All right. So he said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery. So two things to point out here. One, Jesus kind of takes Shammai's. He says, if I got to pick one, I'm going to pick Shammai. Like, adultery, sexual immorality, that's the only one. Like, that's the only one. Out of these, like I can only assume that he's talking out of their common interpretations. But this is the one that this has enough cause. You're breaking the marriage so badly at this point that, all right, no, we can dissolve this. But the important thing here is that he says, because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce. Now, all these other rabbis would teach that divorce is required. Like, if adultery is committed, you have to be divorced. If she burns your toast, boom, divorced. Like, what? This is crazy. And Jesus says, no, it's not required. It's allowed in sexual immorality cases, but it is not required. You can choose forgiveness. You can choose reconciliation. You can fight for this, is what he's getting at here. You can choose this. Now, what we've been doing here is we've been setting up for where we really want to go for our singleness sermon here, even though this all ties in. But where we really want to go is this next bit. So after hearing this teaching, the disciples said to him, in verse 10 here, if such is the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry. But Jesus, and they're probably expecting Jesus to they're freaking out here, and they're expecting Jesus to come back. Oh, no. Here's what you misunderstand me. And he throws them a curveball here because he said to them, not everyone can receive this saying, but only those to whom it is given. For there are eunuchs who have been so from birth, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Let the one who is able to receive this receive it. So the disciples are freaking out, and Jesus drops this bomb that says it's okay to not be married or reproduce. Now, for us, this doesn't necessarily sound strange, but in their time and their culture, the Jewish people put a lot of credence. They gave a lot of weight to the command from God to be fruitful and multiply. They believe that this is a huge deal. This is the first command that God gives. And then he re-gives it to Noah. This is a huge deal for them to be fruitful and multiply. So Jesus is throwing out some crazy stuff here, saying that it's okay to not be married and reproduce. Comparing it, saying it's okay to be a eunuch. Like, eunuchs are kind of looked down upon. I can only imagine we kind of, even nowadays, we'd kind of be like, oh, dude, he's just not quite right. Even you Game of Thrones people, like, think of how the eunuchs are treated in that one. I can't recommend that you watch that, but... Or any other story that involves this type of character, they're often the brunt of jokes or they're mocked. Like, this is, and Jesus is saying, no, it's okay. Like, it's okay to not be married. The disciples are, like, probably freaking out a little bit. This is crazy. To give a little perspective on what they might be thinking, the Theological Dictionary of the New Testament has this quote, for rabbis, marriage was an unconditional duty. Unconditional. There is only one known instance of a celibate rabbi, Ben Azai. I don't know if I'm quite saying that right, but I think it is. Azzai. He was sharply blamed by other rabbis. And when it says sharply blamed, he was chastised. They gave him a ton of crap. Okay? This is a quote about him. He does not see the continuation and propagation of the race as commanded in Genesis 1:28. May he be accounted by Scripture as if he diminished the image of God, that he diminished the divine image, that he somehow took the image of God and said, nope, God is not as important. Like, I cannot imagine a more vicious attack on a rabbi. That just sounds brutal. Brutal. So this is the weight that Jewish culture puts on this, the call to be fruitful and multiply. Here's another quote from the Talmud: any man not married by 20 is in sin. Rabbi Eleazar, any man who has no wife isn't a proper man. Wow. Like, this is the weight that they give this command. You can see this in the Old Testament when Abraham marries Sarah. Sarah is barren. And this isn't just for guys. Like, females, their identity, their worth is wrapped up in their ability to produce children. Sarah being barren, like, it's crazy. It's outlandish that Abraham would choose her as his wife. Because now they can't propagate. Now they can't have kids. It's crazy. Because this is so important to their culture. Basically, you look at people who can't have kids as being broke or useless. Like they're looked down upon. They're second-rate citizens. There's something wrong with them. And Jesus is saying it's okay. No, in fact, it's saying, like, it's good. It's good. Like, they're doing this for the kingdom. Like, let the one who is able to receive it. Not everyone can hear this, right? Not everyone can receive this. But only, like, it's given to some. And he's saying there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Like, they're serving God to the point that they're giving this up. And that's okay. This is mind-blowing stuff for them. Now, the odd tangent here, just a little side note. The very next story, if you continue on in Matthew 19 there, the next story is the children coming to Jesus. And this is, we know the disciples are trying to push them away and keep the children away. They've just heard this, that apparently be fruitful and multiply isn't that important. Like, it's not what they thought it was. So, well, okay, now we're going to keep the kids away. But Jesus then flips it on him again and says, no, let the children come to me. Like, wait, what are you doing? I can only imagine the disciples are a little confused, possibly. Like, this is contradictory. And Jesus says that the children are, like, the kingdom of heaven is of these, right? So, I think Jesus might be making a point here. When we see things contradict, it might be good to pull this out. But I think that he's making a point. I think that we could possibly pull out of this that be fruitful and multiply doesn't necessarily only mean reproduce biologically. Now, you can go wrestle in your care groups with that this week. You can go chase that down. Go dig into that more. I would encourage you to. I think there's something there. It'd be great care group fodder. And so at this point in the sermon, we're going to jump back to the live recording because this is where Rob, thankfully, remembered to start recording. So we're going to jump into the live recording now. The next thing we need to talk about here is the difference between prescriptive and descriptive. Because there are two ways to kind of look at Scripture and judge what it's doing, because there's purposes here. And one of them is prescriptive. So things can be written prescriptively, and this is teaching you or telling you the way things should be. Think of the book of Leviticus or the Ten Commandments. They're laying down the law. This is the way you should act. This is what you should do, right? Now, on the other side of this, you've got things that are descriptive. Think of the story of David and Goliath. Right? This is an account. It's describing the way something happened or the way it was. And if we read David and Goliath as a prescriptive, we would all go start running around and throwing rocks at people who are blaspheming God, which probably isn't the point. That's a silly example, but it kind of explains the difference between the two. And a lot of times it ends up being a little trickier, but we need to understand the difference here. To determine what we're reading and which category it falls in. For example, if we go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, this one gets used in relationship series all the time. There's a ton of sermons on this, and some of them are good. Some of them are interesting. But Paul is writing to the church in Corinth, and he spent 6 chapters talking about these things that he's had orally reported to him. So somebody came and told him, he's been shooting the breeze, like, this is what I've heard is going on. And there's a lot of debauchery going on that he's referring to in this first 6 chapters. Like, I think right before this was the guy that's sleeping with his, like, stepmother or mother-in-law or something. It's just like, and there, Paul says, like, the Romans wouldn't even do this. What are you doing? Calling them out. But now in chapter 7, he finally gets to what they wrote him about originally. So, now concerning the matters about which he wrote, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. So they wrote him this. They're questioning whether this is okay. And he continues, but because of the... go back. Because of the temptation of sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. There's a lot of this going on in those first 6 chapters. So he said, because of this, like, you guys got to set this up. And the husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does.
That sounds all right. Next one. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. I think we forget that one sometimes. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer. But then come together again, like the Beatles song, come together, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now it's a concession, not a command, as a description of this situation, not prescriptive. I say this, I wish that all were as I myself am. Paul's single. But each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. So Paul is coming back to them. He's like, no, it's totally okay. Like, if you just want to be celibate and not be married and not be committed like that, like, that's okay. You don't have to be. But he puts this caveat, like, you got to be able to not be ruled by your desires. And it's, I think it's important to note that burn with passion here, he does mention in 2 Corinthians, or 2 Corinthians, that he, so bad, I can't look at you. Paul's distracting me. In 2 Corinthians, I think it's chapter 11, he says he himself has he has these desires. So what he's saying here is you can't give in to these desires. It's not, you can't be ruled by your passions. You can't be burning with it. You got to control that fire. He's totally backing up what Jesus says when he's talking about the eunuchs. So this doesn't change after Jesus leaves or anything like this. He's backing up what he says. It's okay. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It can even be a blessing. So what we're going to do now is we're going to fast forward to our culture, because I think we can pull some things out of this. Because we look around at the world today, and in secular culture, we often see this trend of pushing back marriage, waiting till later and later. My generation is pushing it back later and later. I think the average is 28 now, so I'm waiting for that to push back to 29. I'm hoping I can just keep riding that wave. It's going to be perfect. It's going to be perfect. But my mom, I can always just bring that back to my mom or my grandpa and be like, see, the average age, I'm just average. It's fine. But we push off marriage and what we're doing is we're pushing it off for our own selves. We push this back for career, travel, education, or we just simply don't want to be tied down, right? But we also have this thing with like Tinder and Bumble, and I don't even remember the rest of them. There's all these apps where you swipe one direction or another. I don't know which direction. So left, right, left, I don't know. You swipe one way or another, and you're like, basically, you're just setting up one-night stands in a lot of ways. Because we do crave intimacy. We talked about this in the first week of the series, that we crave intimacy as humans. Like, we're designed for relationship with people, and we crave that intimate relationship. We're designed for intimate relationship with God, and we crave that. And if we don't have that, we create pseudo-intimacy. We create something that we want to fill that gap in our lives. We want to fill that void. And so we create this pseudo-intimacy. And I don't think I really need to get too much up on the soapbox here. Like, that's created some issues in our society. I mean, porn is a huge industry. I think we've created some issues. So we take sex out of its proper context. I'm not going to talk too much about that. One, not a lot of experience. Two, Paul's talking about it next week. I have a lot of names for that sermon. He won't let me say any of them. It's no fun. Come find me later. I know. Come to my care group. We have more fun. Anyway, feelings of inadequacy. These run through our culture. If you can't get the guy, if you can't get the girl, like somehow like you're not worth something. That has echoes of the Be Fruitful and Multiply. Think of any sappy romance movie, like The Notebook or anything on the Hallmark Channel or all of those Christmas movies. Like, we're suckers for this. We crave this. Disney. Oh, Disney. The Someday My Prince Will Come. We create this narrative that, like, you're incomplete by yourself. Even though we're pushing off marriage, you're incomplete by yourself, and you need your Prince Charming to show up and sweep you off your feet, and then everything will be happily ever after. but they don't talk about the after, but it's going to be happy, we promise. They never fight. You know, it's fine. I'm excited for Frozen 2. That's all I got to say about that one. Frozen 2, the relationship gets icy. Anyway, so we've got that. We see this in our culture. We chase bad relationships. We see codependency, abusive situations, like all sorts of terrible relationships. Relationship that is not as God designed it to be. And it sends this really mixed message. But that's just outside the church, right? That's just outside the church. They've got it all screwed up. We got it perfectly fine in here. Like I said, I polled some friends on Facebook. Last Wednesday I threw this up. And I said, hey, church friends that grew up going to church or whatever, let me know what your experience was growing up, how you were talked to about singleness, dating, relationships, sex, like all of that stuff. Just throw it at me, but not in the comment section because I don't want to moderate that. I had a suspicion. Well, a couple of them landed in the comments, but I did get a lot of direct messages from friends, and it was all over the spectrum. I had 40-year-old plumbers that were saying, one thing, and single moms of my previous students, they were saying another thing, and I had high school friends, and I had all over the spectrum. And there was a lot of hurt, and there was a lot of baggage, and there was a lot of pain. There was a common theme was a lot of them heard when they're younger than 18, still in high school, we had a lot of don't have sex, sex is bad, stay pure, you don't want to be garbage. Which isn't necessarily bad. This is what we do. We take these messages and they're not necessarily wrong, but then we give them the wrong, sex is supposed to be a good thing. I'm trampling on your sermon next week. Sex is a good thing, but we take it out of its context and then we say sex is bad, sex is bad. And so those kids hear that sex is bad. And that if you do lose your virginity before marriage, somehow your self-worth is tied up in that. And somehow grace doesn't apply to that. Like, reading some of these messages, one, made me really angry. Two, kind of broke my heart a little bit. Like, there's a lot of baggage here. We also heard other things like, don't date, only court, because that's biblical. This is prescriptive versus descriptive. Spoiler warning, the Bible doesn't actually talk about that much. Like, not specifically. There's no commandment God says, you shalt only date, or you shalt only court. Like this, he doesn't actually talk about this. And the church kind of either ignores it, or just kind of messes up that conversation a lot of times. And it sounds like I'm ragging on the church. Like, I'm part of the church. Obviously, I'm preaching. So what I'm getting at here is we need to have a better conversation about this. We need to be talking with people one-on-one about this stuff and discipling people in this better. Other possible ones that we hear is don't date unless you know you're going to marry them. That's my favorite. Like, what? Don't date them. Unless you know you're going to, am I supposed to see her picture? And like there's a bolt of lightning and the door's open and there's like doves everywhere. That hasn't happened yet, thus I'm not married. I'm going with that philosophy. Because apparently that's how that's supposed to work. I don't know. That's sarcasm. It's my love language. You didn't mention that one with Molly. But singleness is a time to prepare for your one. Like we make a big deal out of the one in church even, which is, that's still that Disney thing. There's a good joke about Boaz that I can't tell you because Paul will get mad. And once again, this isn't completely wrong, but we're sending a subliminal message that you aren't complete. We're forgetting what Paul and Jesus said, that it's okay. In fact, it can be a blessing. Like we push relationships in the church a lot of time and it's not okay. After you turn 18 though, like it's full bore. Like you need to get married now. Like, Bible colleges, ring by spring. Like, this is a thing. Brandon's over there like, oh yeah, I know. Paul's like, yeah, I know. Bridal colleges, that's right. You go for the MRS degree. It's so bad. And we rush people into marriages a lot of times with that. I'm not going to talk about that too much. We'll just leave that there. Do with that what you will. But that we communicate this concept that something is wrong with you if you're single. And that's not okay, because that is not what Paul is saying. That is not what Jesus is saying. We treat singles as incomplete, assume they're broken. Oh, that's another one. Like, wait, you're 27 and you're not married? What sin are you hiding? Oh, I've never heard that one. That's a fun conversation to have. Or we just don't know what to do with them, and we just don't talk about it. We just hope that the problem will solve itself, and we put them off in some singles ministry. And there's like, it's so bad, it's so bad. But overall, we just don't talk about singleness well, and too often when we do, it doesn't sound busy or it doesn't sound sincere because we're busy pushing marriage. It's like, yeah, singleness is fine, but here's the rest of the 6 weeks of the relationship series about fixing your marriage and getting into marriage and all of this stuff, marriage, 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 and we don't really talk about that side of things as much. So we're going to move into some implications, and it's not going to be like Paul's implications where he's like real quick on them. I'm going to kind of talk through these and explain where I'm coming at with them. So the first one that I want to talk about that I think we can pull out of this whole deal with what Jesus is saying and what Paul is saying and what our community is saying. Because like what I'm getting from people is that we probably shouldn't regard being single as less than being married. And sometimes we don't do that. I'm not saying that this is always the case. But I think we need to be cautious about this. There are pros and cons to both. Me being a single person, I have way more free time, flexibility, and freedom to do whatever the heck I want because I don't have to check with my ball and chain. What? Well, I mean, there's a reason they call it that. Like, I'm joking. Marriage is fine. There's pros and cons to both, right? So I don't have to check with anybody when I want to go out at 2 a.m. to run to Taco Bell. Totally fine. I don't have to check with anybody like, hey, can I spend my money that way? Or it's like, I don't have to have this conversation with myself and argue with myself like Gollum and Smeagol in Lord of the Rings. Like, can I have it? No, it's not in the budget, precious. Like, we don't have to do that. I have freedom, right? If I was married, I should probably converse with my spouse on that. It's probably going to be an issue if I don't, okay? I have a lot of free time because I don't have to spend time investing in kids and I don't have to spend time investing in a spouse. I can then spend that time investing in the kingdom. This is what Jesus is talking about when he says that the eunuchs have been made, have chosen to be eunuchs for the kingdom of God. Like, this is the Catholic priests being celibate. Like, they can devote their lives wholly and completely to chasing that relationship with God and being an example to people. And that's something that is not easy, but it is totally valid, and we should like encourage people in that if that's where they're at in their lives. If you find yourself in this season, Logan, take advantage of this. Like, I have a beautiful opportunity to singly work on my intimate relationship with God. Without any other need to work on an intimate relationship of that level with a spouse, because really that's the only one that's going to compete with it. Like, sure, I need to have an intimate relationship with Paul and be vulnerable and transparent, and that's terrifying, but I need to have that intimate relationship with God first. So if you're in that singleness season, if you know people that are in this singleness season, encourage them to take advantage of it. It's not just a time to wait until marriage and life starts. And we can utilize our freedom to bring the kingdom crashing down to earth. Our second implication here is that singles need community still, and communities need singles. What I'm getting at here, singleness can be lonely. This is one of the cons of singleness. Like, as a married person, you gotta ride or die. You got a partner there. Like, you got somebody to hang out with. Me as a single person, I'm sometimes alone in my house, and it's boring, and there's nobody there, and I'm like, it would be nice, but it's 11 o'clock, and all of my friends are asleep, or it's 2 a.m., and all of my friends are asleep, and, well, crap, now I'm lonely, right? This is a thing, but it doesn't mean that singleness is bad. It's the con of singleness, as opposed to, like, in marriage, sometimes you don't get to be alone, Paul. Like, he talked about this last week. Like, sometimes I just want to be alone, right? So it's these pros and cons, right? And controlling desires, not easy. That's not easy. There's no way to sugarcoat that. That sucks sometimes. So singles need community, one, to deal with loneliness, because they shouldn't just be out floating in the wind by themselves. That's not what, they're part of the body too. We're all part of the same spiritual body. They're not over in their own single spiritual body, and then the couples with kids are over in this spiritual body, and then the grandparents are over in this spiritual body. Like, that's not how it works. We're all one. And they need community to come around them and support them on the sides where this is hard. And in the same way, communities, I think, can value from having the singles giving their perspective on things. Because there's a lot of single people in the world. And if your community is only made up of married people, I would say it's not necessarily wrong, but I think you might be missing some perspectives. So don't limit the community to only people who are in the same stage of life as you. Our third one that we want to talk about is be aware of the messages that you're communicating. I thought about calling this implication, please stop trying to set me up. But that's not quite right. But what I'm getting at here is that singleness is not an illness in need of a cure, as oftentimes people take it as. It's like, oh, hey, you're single, so I need to, this is the perfect example. I'm not going to use names. I knew a couple back in Moscow when I was in college, and I was friends with them, but they were constantly trying to set me up with their friends because we couldn't just hang out as three people. I don't know why they were not okay with a third wheel. Tricycles were bad, apparently. But they needed to set me up so that we could go out on double dates all the time. And it was never about setting me up. It was about they needed to have that fourth person. Or I don't understand it, and it is what it is. But like this concept of like, it's okay. Like you can be friends with the single people. It's fine. We don't bite. We're not lepers. But when we, and whether it's intentional or unintentional, communicating that singleness is anything less than 100% fine is going to distract and sow discontentment with where they are. This means that they're not going to be able to take advantage of the season that they're in. This means that I'm not going to be able to take advantage of the season that I'm in. And that does not mean that you can't, like, if you think that they should meet a person, like, sure, make an introduction. That's fine. But if you're constantly doing this all the time, if this is the culture that you're buying into, you're propitiating the Disney, you're propitiating the you're not okay by yourself. And if they're asking you to set them up, well, then that's totally fine. Fair game. Like, they've brought it on their own heads. I haven't done that. Have you done that? I'm talking to Josh. No, no, okay. Don't set him up either. Yeah. So this is, we just need to be aware of the messages that we're communicating. Because, like Jesus is not saying that you need to be married or you need to not be married. He's just saying it's okay either way. One other thing that we're doing this week, and Paul mentioned this in the announcements a little bit, was on your bulletins, there are questions for care group for this next week. And you've got the entire discussion material. There's a section on the Ethiopian eunuch, I think is what we're talking about this week. I wonder how that ties in. But there's discussion questions in there. And I encourage you to go through and dig into that text and go through those questions and jot down some answers. And when you come to care group this week, when you come to your community to wrestle with these things, maybe there's some stuff out of the sermon that we want to talk about and we want to wrestle with and be like, what does he mean by that? Or I didn't agree with this, or this was my experience. Like, put that stuff down too, because this needs to be talked about in community and brought forth, because if we don't talk about it, that's the one thing that I got from all of my friends that mentioned this, is if the churches just ignored it and they left people with no idea what to do with this phase of their life, things went haywire like 9 times out of 10, and it just wasn't good. So we need to, as a community, steward this better and have a discussion about this better. If you're not in a care group, this is a great opportunity to talk to me, Rob, or Paul, and get into a care group so that we can discuss these things. Because you need to, like, your voice needs to be heard in this too. Because it's valuable. What you have to say is valuable.
You've been listening to the Mission Ridge Church Podcast. Mission Ridge is a new church in Missoula, Montana. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit us online at missionridge.church. If you are in the Missoula area, we would love to meet you. We hold service at the Hilton Garden Inn Conference Center on Sundays at 10:30 a.m. We would love to have you join us. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.